This is On Point. I'm David Folkenflik. Last Thursday, a memorial opened in Montgomery, Alabama, to honor the thousands of African Americans lynched in this country between 1877 and 1950. A few blocks away, on the site of a former slave pen, sits a museum detailing the history of the African slave trade through the modern-day mass incarceration of black men. This may be a tough segment to listen to, and it should be. It represents the legacy of one of the most shameful and violent episodes in U.S. history. You can join the conversation. Have you been to the memorial and museum? How well does this approach reconcile modern-day America to a hateful part of its history? Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. I'd like to play a clip now of Brian Stevenson. He's the founder and director of the Equal Justice Initiative, the group behind the memorial and museum. Speaking to NPR's Debbie Elliott last week, he described the connection between the past and the present.
There's a lot of conflict. There's a lot of tension. We're dealing with police violence. We're dealing with these huge disparities in our criminal justice system. If everything was wonderful, you could ask the question, well, why would you talk about that difficult past? But everything is not wonderful.
Everything is not wonderful. We'll read a couple of examples of people who were lynched during this period. Let's start with Elizabeth Lawrence. She was lynched on July 5th, 1933 in Birmingham, Alabama, a school teacher not accused of any crime, but who scolded white children who were throwing rocks at her. An angry mob went to her home, seized her, burned her house to the ground before lynching her. Her son sought justice, and the same lynch mob pursued him, forcing him to flee to Boston. Joining me now from Montgomery, Alabama, is Bro Krift. He's the executive editor of the Montgomery Advertiser. His paper has been telling the stories of lynching victims, and you can find a link to the editorial headlined, Our Shame, the Sins of Our Past, Laid Bare for All to See, at On Point's website, onpointradio.org. Bro Krift, welcome to On Point.
Hi, David. It's great to be with you. Thank you.
And with us from Detroit, Michigan is Kadada Williams. She's a professor of history at Wayne State University. She's the author of They Left Great Marks on Me, African-American Testimonies of Racial Violence from Emancipation to World War I. Kadada Williams, welcome to On Point.
Thank you for having me.
Professor, I wonder, as a scholar, as somebody who's researched this, as a teacher, as an African-American, what you hear and how you feel when you hear aloud the tale just in miniature of Elizabeth Lawrence?
Well, as a scholar, it rings true to what we know was the case for most lynchings. You know, lynchers, they crafted this narrative of what they said happened, justifying their actions. But many more people were killed for some of the same reasons or for the exact same reason as Elizabeth Lawrence. I have to say that I'm delighted by the museum's opening. I think that their efforts to name the names of lynching victims, to tell their stories from their point of view and not from the lynchers' point of view, mm-hmm. I think represents an incredible opportunity for the nation to possibly move forward.
Kadada, tell me a little bit more about what you mean by that, because I think it's a really important point. This is a museum looking at victims as people with families, effects and repercussions. You've written about that, about how I think in one of your writings you wrote about how somebody testifying before either a congressional inquiry or something talked about, look, these ramifications are current. They didn't just occur in isolation on the night when somebody tried to lynch members of our family.
Right. I think that part of what happens is that a lot of times historians in particular, we access lynching through newspapers. And newspapers tell a story that is often very sympathetic to the killers. Hmm. Or if they're not necessarily sympathetic, then they don't get to the level of victims. They're not directly contacting or shining a light on families' homes. And so it is only when you have African Americans in a position of safety where they can tell their stories, where they can communicate the horrors that – the experienced horrors that their families and their communities endured, that we can get to the real heart of this violence. And I think that that's, again, part of what we've been missing, this missing piece in the history that the museum's opening is opening the possibility for us to gain access to these kinds of stories because they go beyond the newspaper headline. They connect with family members. They can sort of reveal their lives beyond that moment, that horrific moment of their deaths.
That's a perfect pivot to Bro Krift, the executive editor of Montgomery Advertiser, obviously a major institution in town as well as the major news outlet in town. Tell me about what it's like to walk through the museum, the memorial, and what it means to your city and your community.
It's a powerful experience to see the narrative unfold from slavery to the modern day.
What do you see?
You see victims of lynching. You see the words that were used to describe people. You see advertisements. You hear the voices of people and their experience, and particularly African-American experiences, which is important. Because like Dr. Williams said, too often African-Americans were characterized in our newspaper and other places almost as stock characters. They weren't developed into full humans. Their experience wasn't described in our paper, for example, throughout the late 19th century and into the early 20th century. We didn't make efforts to make their voices come out. And what you hear in the museum and what you feel in the memorial is quite the opposite of that. It takes responsibility to those voices and make sure they get heard and the names get recognized.
How much of an inspiration was that to you? You wrote fairly remarkable editorial, and your paper has done some really notable pieces of late, reckoning not only with the history of lynching in the American South, in Alabama, in Montgomery, but with your own paper's legacy.
We felt a huge responsibility to take ownership for our past because, unlike you and I, the newspaper existed since 1829. We were a part of this. We were complicit to it. Mm-hmm. And we feel a responsibility as reporters and as editors. We want to be able to show life and show how it means to live, right, to love, to struggle, the regrets. And we didn't do that with the victims of lynchings. We created a narrative wholly rooted in the white perpetrators. For example, there was one man who was killed in Elmore County named Robin White. And we were able to discover documents through our research of our paper. He was lynched. A man actually confessed, and there was a conviction. However, the governor gave clemency to him and two other lynchers. And we had to tell the story through documents that showed the voices of the white men who perpetrated it. In fact, the only known word that came out of Robin White's mouth was goodbye before he was lynched. And I think that's a shame. It's actually a disgrace. It's a false bias narrative. We weren't doing our job at the time.
A library memorial spreading the idea of accountability and of holding oneself accountable there at the newspaper. I'd like to take a call now from Salem, Virginia. Destin, go ahead.
Hi, David. Yes. So I really have a comment about, I guess, the new memorial in the museum.
Yes,
I think it's really important that we continue to have these talks and these conversations, because even if someone is 27 years old from Southern Virginia and in an area that experienced some lynchings throughout history, it was maybe only a paragraph in public schools. I didn't learn most of this stuff until I got to college, shamefully. Even as a black male that's 27, I should know these things, but unfortunately it isn't covered too well.
Well,
so I think it's really good that we're having this conversation and it's coming up.
Well, Destin, I thank you so much for that call. I wanted to offer another vignette at this moment, not a happy one, about a man named Henry Smith, lynched February 1st, 1893 in Lamar County, Texas. He was accused of murdering a white girl. No investigation or trial. A posse seized him. Police did not intervene. He was stripped naked, beaten, placed on a carnival float, paraded through town to the fairgrounds. He was tortured by a mob for over an hour, and that mob burned him alive. His body parts, ashes, and pieces of bone sold as souvenirs. Kidada Williams, this is heavy history to go through, but yet important history to go to. What was the point? What was the origin? What was the meaning behind these lynchings? What was the message being conveyed, and why was this punishment exacted so horrifically over so many years?
Well, this violence is designed to uphold white supremacy. You know, it occurs during this period after slavery where white supremacists have lost slavery, but they've spent a lot of time trying to hold on to it as much as they can. And so they're looking for new ways to subjugate African-Americans, and they do it through Jim Crow segregation. They do it through disfranchisement, and they also have to do it through violence. And they have to do it through violence because African-Americans are always fighting and resisting the argument that they're not entitled to any of the nation's privileges, the nation's the sort of fruits of the nation. So they're always fighting and resisting this. And violence, especially public spectacle violence like we see with lynching, becomes an effective way of forcing African-Americans to sometimes decide between resistance and survival. What they learn through these killings is that if they resist white supremacy, not even if they accuse, not even if they commit a real crime, but if they resist the this sort of new order or this order that they're trying to erect in the Jim Crow era, that this is what can happen to him, happen to them. What happened to Henry Smith? What happened to Elizabeth Lawrence can happen to them too. And so it creates terror within the communities. You have a combination of the death and the fear of being killed or having a loved one killed in this exact same way. And that's what white supremacists wanted. That's what they needed in order to maintain the racial hierarchy that they're trying to create. And it's actually quite effective. And that's one of the reasons why they're able to hold on to it for so long. Lynching doesn't go punished because there are so many people in the community who are benefiting from it at all levels of white society and even at all levels of government, from the local authorities to the federal government.
There was a black man named Elmore Bowling. He was shot to death in 1947 by a white neighbor, never prosecuted for the killing. His name is now among the thousands listed at the National Memorial for Peace and Justice. Josephine McCall went to the memorial. She is the daughter of Elmore Bowling. She's now 75 and described what that meant to her.
We have not been acknowledged, my family, as victims of a lynching. And this is the first opportunity that we'll have that someone will actually acknowledge the terrorism that we faced.
That video from the Associated Press. Kidada Williams, how past is this history? How present is it? We've obviously had in recent months arguments over the place of memorials and monuments to Confederate war generals, those who fought to sustain slavery, those presumably who had some sympathy with those who exacted retribution in the decades after the Civil War. How past is this?
It's not that past. Not at all. One of the things that we see from Mr. Bowling's family is that these families, they carried the sort of the cost of these killings with them even into the present day. They had their lives broken open and it wasn't recognized or acknowledged at the time, and they oftentimes didn't feel safe talking about it publicly. It's also present in the fact that what we have in modern day police and vigilante killings of unarmed African Americans is sort of like this legacy of lynching. And even the fact that we continue to debate what's happening, whether or not police and vigilantes who kill unarmed African Americans are going to be brought to justice is part of the fact that it's still tied to these old mindsets that are sort of reinvented for the present day.
I'd like to take a call now from Appleton, Maine. Claire, what are your thoughts on this?
Hi, David. I am just thrilled that we're having this conversation and that monuments are going up to honor people that have been treated so badly in our country's history. And I think more of those Confederate statues need to come down and more of these need to go up in their place.
Well, thank you so much for that call, Claire. I want to offer a last vignette. Calvin McDowell, William Stewart, Thomas Moss, three men lynched March 9th, 1892 in Shelby County, Tennessee. They ran a grocery store. They were jailed because their store threatened the businesses of others who were white. A mob of 75 white men seized the three black men from jail, placed ropes around their necks and murdered them in an open field. No one ever held responsible despite eyewitnesses and a grand jury investigation. You know, Brocrift, you're the executive editor of the Montgomery Advertiser. It strikes me that what we're talking about is not only a failure, obviously, of justice and decency, but a failure of, in real time, people being – or even near time, people being willing to account for what occurred, people being willing to bear witness to that. Tell me what the response has been in your community to your acknowledgement of your newspaper's past as well as your state and your region's past.
Before I answer that, I want to bring something up about Elmore Bowling's family that I think is a super powerful piece.
Sure.
There's five children that still are alive because he was killed in 1947. Melissa Brown here at the Advertiser wrote a wonderful narrative about him, and it has one of the most gut-wrenching leads that I have ever read about one of his sons seeing his father shot on the side of the road. And he learned of a legend that he heard that you can't go to heaven with your boots on. So he went to his father's body and he pulled his boots off so he could go from the side of the road and hopefully to heaven. And if you ever think about the affliction and the pain that occurs and what we're talking about today in the 21st century, it's firmly rooted in something that just happened in the mid-20th century. And by us telling, go ahead, you, sir.
I was going to say, bro, briefly, tell us what the reaction has been from your readers and your community to what you guys have unearthed about your own record, your own response in the face of these violence.
It's been overwhelmingly positive by telling those narratives, like the Bowling family, Robin White, and then also us self-reflecting and being self-aware of our part in the history. I'm extremely excited that the idea that people are saying, thank you for doing this. Thank you for putting out your sins laid bare for us and being honest. Because I think what's happening right now, there's too much finger-pointing, and people aren't necessarily looking at themselves and saying, admitting that they have made mistakes. And we profoundly made a mistake during that era, and it's important for people to see that, and hopefully they'll step forward and recognize their own connection to the past. We have received some calls, but very minimal calls of people saying that we need to move on, but we decided we can't move on. We have to reflect and then move forward.
That's Bro Kryft, executive editor of Montgomery Advertiser. Thanks so much, Bro, for joining us.
Thank you.
And Kidada Williams, she's professor of history at Wayne State University. Thank you so much for giving us your time.
Thank you.
You can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website at onpointradio.org. And you can follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. We'll leave you with Billie Holiday's classic rendition of the civil rights anthem Strange Fruit, a haunting lyric protest of American racism and the lynching of African Americans. The lyrics are by Abel Meeropol. I'm David Folkenflik, and this is On Point.
Southern trees bear a strange fruit, blood on the leaves and blood at the root, black bodies swinging in the southern breeze, strange fruit hanging from the poplar tree.